She was hired to play pretend. Just a fake girlfriend for a night, a few kisses, a few lies, and a fat paycheck. But what started as a cold con turned into something dangerously real. She wasn't supposed to fall in love with the Mark's girlfriend. She wasn't supposed to betray her own rules. And she sure as hell wasn't supposed to get caught. But when love, lust, and lies collide, someone always gets burned. The girlfriend experience isn't just a story of identity fraud. It's a slow seduction into obsession, betrayal, and the kind of heartbreak you don't walk away from clean. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Girlfriend Experience. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Hired Love. You ever wake up, stare at the ceiling, and wonder how the hell you got here? Not in that life is beautiful kind of way. I mean that dark ass, stomach sinking, what the fuck is this mess I've built kind of way. That's me. Every fucking morning. But here's the twist, I'm not lost. I'm not confused. I know exactly what I'm doing. And I'm damn good at it. I just stopped caring whether or not it made me a bad person. Hell, I probably am one. But in this world, nice girls get steamrolled. Bad girls? We run the show. I make a living pretending to be what men want. Girlfriends. Fantasy. Sugar with a twist of poison. I sell the illusion, not the reality. I smile, touch, flirt, whisper lies in their ears that they want to believe. I become the dream they didn't know they were paying for. It started out as a side hustle. Just a few gigs here and there. Weddings, work parties, family dinners where some prick needed to prove to his dying mother he wasn't going to die alone. I was a warm body with a fake smile and a killer sense of humor. It paid better than bartending and came with better outfits. But over time, it grew into something else. Something darker. And that night with Chase, that's when everything changed. It was 8:47 p.m. on a Friday when I got the DM. Simple. Cold. No emojis. No pleasantries. Need a plus one. No strings. Just need you to act like you're my girl for a night. You in. No name. No picture. Just the kind of message that screams. Rich asshole with a guilty conscience and a fat wallet. I stared at the screen, half drunk off Merlot, curled up on my couch in a silk robe I stole from a hotel in Miami. I took a long drag from my vape, let the smoke sit in my lungs, and exhaled like I was exorcising my last shred of morality. I replied, "What's the budget?" Within seconds, he wrote back, "3,000. One night. No sex. Just pretend. Pretend. Bitch, that's my superpower." I slid into something classy, blood-red dress with a slit up my thigh and heels that made my legs look like sin itself. My makeup? Dangerous. Smoky eyes. Matte lips. Gold highlights like I had secrets to tell. The venue was some pretentious rooftop bar downtown. The kind where every cocktail has a name like Rosemary Guilt, and the waiters look like failed actors. I walked in like I owned the air. And then I saw him. Chase. Tall. Tan. Perfectly unbothered. Expensive watch, teeth too white, and that smug energy of a man who's never been told no by someone who meant it. He wore arrogance like cologne. The kind of man who'd step over a homeless person while checking stock prices. He smiled when he saw me. That smile. It didn't reach his eyes. It never would. "You're even better in person," he said, offering me his arm like we were old lovers. "Let's make a few heads turn." I slipped my arm into his and turned on the charm like flipping a light switch. That night, I played my role to perfection. I laughed at all the right moments, tilted my head when he spoke, rested my hand on his knee like it was second nature. I made his friends think we had a shared history, a deep connection, the kind that made them whisper jealous little lies to their own girlfriends later that night. But I wasn't there for them. I was there for her. Tasha, his real girlfriend. She showed up midway through the night. Unannounced. Uninvited. Unimpressed. The moment she walked in, the air shifted. The music felt louder. The lights brighter. My senses sharpened like a blade. I felt her before I saw her. She was stunning. In a way that said, "I don't even try that hard." Long legs. A face you could paint on money. But there was a crack in her confidence. Her smile was tight. Her eyes sharp and searching. And when she saw me, bitch looked like she just swallowed battery acid. Chase didn't flinch, didn't even acknowledge her presence, which told me everything I needed to know. She was the ex he couldn't let go of, the one he still fucked behind closed doors, the one he hired me despite. That's what this whole thing was. Not loneliness, not companionship, revenge. And I was the weapon. We stayed for another hour. Every time I laughed too loud or leaned in too close, I watched her shoulders tense, her jaw lock, her hands curl around her drink like she wanted to throw it. I was winning, but I wasn't just winning for him. I was winning for me, because the moment I saw her, I knew she wasn't the enemy. She was the opportunity. The next morning, I woke up in a hotel room Chase paid for. Alone, of course. He knew the rules. No sex. No touching unless I initiated. No falling in love with the mask I wore. He left a note on the nightstand. You were perfect. And next to it, a stack of cash in a white envelope. Crisp bills. No bullshit. I stared at those words, you were perfect, and something inside me twisted. It's funny, right? How men can buy your time, your smile, your laugh, and call it love. But what haunted me wasn't Chase. It was Tasha. The way she looked at me. Not with hatred. With curiosity. As if she was wondering what it felt like to be me. To be the kind of woman who could walk into a room and own it. That's when the idea started to form. Not a plan. Not yet. Just a flicker of potential. Something dangerous. Something delicious. I didn't expect her to reach out. But a week later, she did. She messaged me through a fake account. No picture. Just a name I didn't recognize and a message that made my lips curl. I know you're not really with him. Let's talk. I didn't reply right away. Had to let her sweat. Let the silence eat at her. Desperation makes people sloppy. It also makes them generous. She sent another message. I'm not mad. I just want to meet. Coffee. Just talk. So I agreed. We met at a boutique cafe in the Arts District. The kind of place where the lattes cost more than rent, and the chairs looked like recycled trash, but in a quirky way. I arrived early, took a seat by the window, watched the rain smear the glass like mascara on a crying face. When she walked in, she looked like every woman who's ever been fucked over by a man and still wasn't ready to admit it. Her heels clicked like accusations. Her coat was designer. Her eyes, still hollow, still lonely. She sat down across from me, ordered chai like she needed comfort, and stared at me like I was a riddle she couldn't solve. I know he paid you, she said, stirring her cup like she wanted to stab it. I didn't say anything, just smiled. Don't worry. I'm not here to fight, she added quickly. Honestly, I respect the hustle. I raised an eyebrow. You called me here to compliment me? She leaned in, whispered, I want to hire you. Now she had my attention. She didn't want revenge. She wanted validation. She wanted proof. She wanted me to keep playing the part, keep being the perfect little girlfriend, just long enough for Chase to slip, fuck up, cheat again, so she could finally leave him for good. She had no idea who she was talking to. I told her I'd help. Of course I did. But in my head, I was already planning the heist of the century. Because this wasn't just about pretending anymore. This was about becoming. Becoming the woman she wanted to be. Becoming the dream she didn't know she craved. Becoming her obsession, her addiction, and then, taking everything. Her love, her money, her fucking identity. The girlfriend experience. Chapter 2, Soft Spots and Trap Doors. I never expected to like her. That wasn't part of the plan. This was supposed to be another cold con. A quick score. Slide into the cracks of someone else's dysfunction, play both sides, cash out before the pieces hit the floor. But the moment Tasha sat across from me at that cafe, I knew. She wasn't built for this world. She was delicate. Not weak, don't get it twisted. There's a difference. Weak breaks under pressure. Delicate bends, folds, hides, and pretends. And women like her, they're the most dangerous kind. Because when they snap, they don't just burn bridges, they light the whole fucking town on fire and make it look like a candlelight vigil. But back then, in that soft glow of cafe lights, she looked like the kind of girl who kept her pain in pretty little boxes. Wrapped in silk, tied with a bow, easy to carry, easier to ignore. She didn't even flinch when I said, "You want me to keep pretending to be Chase's girlfriend, so you can catch him cheating and end things?" She nodded slowly, hands folded on the table like she was praying. "That's the idea. And what's in it for me?" I watched her pause. She hadn't thought that far. "Money," she finally said. "I can pay you." "How much?" 10 grand. 5 up front. 5 when I have what I need." I leaned back, crossing my legs, giving her a full view of what control looks like in a tight leather jacket and no fucks left to give. "You're paying me 10 grand to make your boyfriend cheat on you?" Her voice was quieter now. "He already is cheating. I just need proof. Enough to justify walking away legally." Legally. That's when I understood. This wasn't just about love. It was about power. It was about leverage. That's when I knew I had her. You want to bury him? Her eyes met mine. No blinking. No flinching. I want to be free. And just like that, the leash slipped from her own hand and landed in mine. The next few weeks were like a slow-motion heist. Not the kind with guns and masks. No alarms. No hostages. Just soft touches, well-timed whispers, and eyes that always seemed a little too wet, like I felt something real. I played the role for Chase perfectly. Girlfriend 2.0. I cooked him breakfast, burnt eggs on purpose, so I could pout and let him teach me. I wore his oversized shirts with nothing underneath, made it seem like intimacy instead of strategy. I laughed too loud in public and made sure the world saw us. And he ate that shit up. The man had the emotional depth of a coffee filter. I didn't have to try that hard. But the real game? It wasn't Chase. It was Tasha. Because after every date, every setup, every fake kiss caught on camera or flirt caught in a mirror, I'd text her. Updates. Details. Proof that her little plan was working. But it wasn't her plan anymore. It was mine. She started asking to meet outside of the operation. Said she had questions. Said she wanted to get to know me. Woman to woman. That's how she framed it. As if we were sisters in some betrayal club. Like I hadn't already measured her neck for a noose made of satin lies. Still, I agreed. Because I wanted her closer. I needed to see the seams in her smile. The places she was sewn together with fear and guilt and desperation. She took me to this spa downtown, one of those bougie places that smells like eucalyptus and silence. We got massages, mud masks, champagne and crystal flutes while our faces hardened with clay. She kept watching me, like she was trying to figure out what made me tick. "You're not like other women," she said softly as we sat side by side, wrapped in white robes, our feet soaking in some kind of Himalayan salt bullshit. "Oh yeah. What's that mean?" "I don't know," she said, sipping her drink. You don't try to please people. You're just you. Unapologetically. I laughed. Loud and sharp. "If you think this is the real me, babe, you've already lost." She smiled, but it didn't reach her eyes. "I don't care. I like it." And for the briefest second, I felt something. Not guilt. Not warmth. But a strange echo. Like a knock from inside a locked room I'd forgotten existed. I looked at her. Really looked. And I saw it, loneliness. It clung to her like static. The kind of loneliness that lives in penthouses and behind designer sunglasses. The kind that makes you lie next to someone every night and still feel like you're screaming into a void. She wasn't just broken. She was empty. And me, I was starting to fill that void. Not with kindness, but with control. The sex with Chase was inevitable. He pushed boundaries like a kid testing bedtime. Every night he got a little bolder. A hand on my thigh. A kiss that lingered too long. Whispers about taking this further. I let him get close. Close enough to fall. But never close enough to touch. It drove him insane. Which made him reckless. Which made my job easy. I left little pieces of evidence for Tasha. Lipstick-stained glasses. Text messages sent at 2 a.m. Receipts for hotel rooms with two guests and one bed. I gave her breadcrumbs, and she followed every one of them like she was starving for betrayal. One night, she called me crying. Said she was ready to end it. Said she had everything she needed. Said thank you. And I said nothing. Because this wasn't the end. It was the beginning. I didn't expect her to ask me to dinner. But she did. Said she wanted to celebrate. Said she was finally free. I met her at this rooftop spot. Same one where I first met Chase. Full circle. She wore red. I wore black. Together, we looked like sin and sorrow sipping wine under string lights. We talked for hours. Not about him. About us. Our lives. Our ghosts. I told her pieces of the truth. About my childhood. About my mother's boyfriends. About the first time I learned that men will say anything if you just pretend to listen. She told me about her father. How he made her feel invisible, unless she was perfect. How Chase made her feel seen until he didn't. "I thought love was supposed to hurt a little," she said, eyes glossy. "No," I said, brushing a strand of hair from her cheek. "That's just what we're told, so we settle for scraps. We didn't kiss that night. Not yet. But the tension between us? It was a living thing. It sat at the table like a third guest, waiting to be acknowledged. And when we hugged goodbye, she held on just a little too long. I felt it then. The shift. The line between her using me and her needing me? It blurred. She wasn't hiring me anymore. She was falling. And that was the sweetest fucking part of the con. Because the moment she loved me, I owned her. Every breath. Every dollar. Every secret. And soon, every lie. The Girlfriend Experience. Chapter 3, Closer Than Flesh. They say intimacy starts with a touch. A hand grazing yours at the edge of a wine glass. A knee brushing beneath the table. A glance held too long, just daring someone to blink first. But that's not how it starts. Not really. It starts with silence. The kind that stretches between breaths. The kind that makes your skin itch with possibility. That's how it began with Tasha. Not with some grand seduction. Not with fireworks and moans in the dark. It started in the stillness. In those moments when we looked at each other too long, laughed a little too hard, leaned in a little too close. It was the space between our words that told the truth. And I knew how to fill that space. With softness. With danger. With need. After that rooftop dinner, she started texting me at night. At first, it was simple. Hope you made it home safe. Thanks for tonight. I haven't laughed like that in months. Then it got more personal. Can I tell you something I've never told anyone? I played it cool. Gave her space to feel brave. That's how you trap someone like her. You make them feel like confessing is power, not weakness. She told me about her dreams. Her fears. Her panic attacks. The pills she sometimes forgets to take. The way her chest tightens at night, like her ribs are trying to crush her heart. I responded like I cared. Like I saw her. Like I got her. Truth was I'd been her. At one point, but I crawled out of that version of myself and buried the bitch deep. Tasha still lived in her shadow. So I became her light, and she clung to it. The first time I saw her cry in front of me, we were sitting on her couch. It was a Sunday, rain tapping the windows like soft threats. We were watching some bullshit romantic movie. The kind with string music and tear-jerking monologues that made you want to punch the screen. I glanced over and her eyes were glassy. She tried to hide it. Wiped at her face with the sleeve of her oversized sweater. I didn't say anything. Just reached over, pulled her gently toward me. She rested her head on my shoulder. And for the first time, she let go. I used to think love meant sacrificing parts of yourself, she whispered, voice cracking. I'd make myself smaller, quieter, less demanding, just so I wouldn't lose someone. And did it work? I asked softly, stroking her hair. No, she said. I still lost them. I just hated myself in the process. I didn't say anything. Didn't need to. I let her sit in that truth. Sometimes that's more powerful than pretending to fix it. She curled into me like a child. And in that moment I knew. She was mine. Not in the sexual sense, yet. In the emotional one. The dangerous one. The one where she'd start questioning who she was when I wasn't around. It wasn't long before Chase faded from the narrative. Tasha stopped asking for updates. Stopped caring about the proof she'd so desperately wanted just weeks before. She had all the closure she needed. And she had me. At least, that's what she thought. She started inviting me over more. Late nights. Bottles of wine. Intimate playlists with songs that whispered things like stay with me and tell me your secrets. I let her initiate everything. That was key. Because once you let someone believe they're the one making the move, you own the outcome. One night, we were sitting on her balcony, legs tangled under a shared blanket, our wine glasses empty, our laughter dying out. And then she turned to me, eyes heavy, lips parted, and she kissed me. Soft, tentative, like a question. I didn't pull away. I kissed her back. Slower, deeper, like an answer. Her hands trembled as they slid around my waist, gripping me like she was afraid I'd vanish if she let go. When we finally pulled apart, her breath hitched. I don't know what I'm doing, she whispered. You're doing fine, I murmured, brushing my thumb over her lip. And that was the beginning of the unraveling. The sex wasn't what I expected. It wasn't explosive. It wasn't wild. It was delicate. Intense. Almost painful in how much she needed it to mean something. She made love like a woman who thought it would save her. And I fucked her like I was writing her name in wet cement. She clung to me afterwards. Head on my chest. Heart racing. Whispering things like, I've never felt this safe before, and I wish I met you sooner. I didn't say the words back, but I kissed her shoulder. Let her think it meant the same thing. Let her think I was falling too. She wasn't just sleeping with me. She was confessing, unloading every cracked piece of herself, handing them over like currency, trusting I wouldn't break her more. But I had no intention of saving her, only owning her. She started changing, subtle things at first, wearing darker lipstick, tighter clothes, saying fuck in casual conversation like it had always been part of her vocabulary. She was becoming me, piece by piece. And I fed it. God, you look dangerous, I'd say. She'd smile. I wanna be, I'd whisper in her ear, You already are. Validation is the deadliest drug. And I was her dealer. But there was one thing she didn't know. One thing I kept buried under my smile and sultry whispers. I wasn't here to fall in love. I wasn't here to help her heal. I was here to rob her blind. Her money. Her identity. Her fucking life. And the deeper she fell, the easier it would be. One night, she took me to her family's beach house, an isolated stretch of coastal property, with floor-to-ceiling glass windows and decor that screamed generational wealth. The kind of place where secrets echo off marble floors and old sins are painted into the walls. She said she wanted me to see where she came from. I smiled and said I was honored, but all I saw were entry points, exits, hidden safes, weak spots in the security system. She showed me her room, left untouched since college, a shrine to the girl she used to be. Photos of cheer camp, debate trophies, letters from her mother folded neatly in a silk box. She asked me to stay the night. We drank whiskey on the deck, wrapped in a throw blanket, her head on my lap. "You ever think about just running away?" she asked, voice laced with sleep and sadness. "Every day," I replied. "I'd go with you." I looked down at her. "You don't even know who I am," I said. She closed her eyes. "I don't care." That's when I knew. She was past the point of no return. And me, I was about to take everything she didn't even realize she was offering. But something strange happened that weekend, a moment I didn't expect. She showed me a lockbox hidden in the back of her father's closet. Inside was a folder of documents, bank accounts, trust funds, stocks. She showed me everything, without hesitation, without fear. "I trust you," she said, smiling like a child who just gave away her last piece of candy. And in that moment, I hesitated. For the first time in my entire fucked up career, I felt it. Not love. Not guilt. Temptation. Not to steal from her. But to stay. And that scared the shit out of me. Because the moment you start caring, you lose. And I don't fucking lose. The Girlfriend Experience. Chapter 4. The Mirror and the Mask. Let me tell you something no one warns you about when you live your life wearing a mask. If you wear it long enough, it stops feeling like a disguise. And starts feeling like you. That's where I was. Staring at myself in Tasha's vanity mirror at 2 in the morning, her naked body tangled in Egyptian cotton sheets behind me, her soft breathing like lullabies for devils. My lipstick was smudged. My eyeliner was a smoky mess. But the face I saw, it wasn't mine anymore. It was hers. It was ours. I'd been playing the part so well, so deeply, so fucking convincingly, that even I couldn't tell where the lies ended and the truth began. And the scariest part? I didn't want to stop. Not yet. Not when I was so close. The morning after the beach house trip, everything changed. Tasha was different. Lighter. Brighter. Like some invisible weight had been lifted from her spine and replaced with something delicious. Hope. She made breakfast barefoot, humming. Hair messy. Skin still glowing from the hours I'd spent worshiping it the night before. And me. I sat on a barstool in one of her hoodies, sipping coffee I didn't even want. Because while she was dancing in the sunshine of whatever new reality she thought we were building, I was planning my escape, and my exit strategy had to be flawless. See, here's the thing about robbing someone who loves you. You can't just vanish. You have to haunt them. Leave just enough of yourself behind to twist the knife, to make them question if they ever really knew you at all. It's not about the money. It's about the mark. You want to stain their memory so deeply that even years later, they can't fuck someone new without thinking about your lips. Tasha wasn't ready for that. But I was. Over the next few weeks, she gave me access to everything. Keys to her penthouse. Her phone passcode. Her fucking banking app. She trusted me like I was some divine savior sent to heal all her past traumas with good pussy and better lies. And I leaned into it. Told her I was looking for a fresh start. Said I was done with the scene, the fake gigs, the transactional bullshit. That all I wanted was her. The way her eyes lit up when I said it? Fucking tragic. But that was the power of the mask. The more you convince them you're the cure, the easier it is to become the disease. One night, we were curled up on her couch, half watching some mindless rom-com, when she asked the question I'd been waiting for. "What if I put you on my account?" I pretended not to hear her. "What? I mean, like, what if I added you to my bank account? Not for anything serious. Just for, you know, emergencies. Stuff like groceries. Or if you ever needed something and I wasn't around." I stared at her like she'd just offered me her soul on a silver fucking platter. "You'd do that." She nodded, fingers brushing mine. "You've given me so much. I want to give something back." And just like that, the vault was wide open. She didn't know it, but her entire life was now resting in the palm of my hand. Her finances, her passwords, her love. And all I had to do was decide how to tear it all apart. But then something unexpected happened. I started dreaming about her. Not the way I usually do about Marks, cold, clean, calculated. These dreams were messy, sticky, emotional. We were holding hands at an amusement park, kissing on a boat, whispering secrets under covers like high school girls in love. I'd wake up sweating, heart pounding, choking on emotions I didn't even want to name. It was pissing me off, because I don't do feelings. Feelings get you caught. Feelings make you hesitate. And hesitation? That's how you end up broke, heartbroken, or in jail. But it wasn't just the dreams. It was everything. The way she smiled when she saw me. The way she reached for me in her sleep. The way she said my name like it was sacred. And the worst part, I started wanting it, craving it. Not the sex, not the stuff. Her. I started imagining what it would feel like to stay. To be hers for real. No angles, no exits, no endgame. It was a dangerous thought. So I killed it, or at least I tried. I started pulling back, just a little, canceling plans, forgetting to answer texts, faking headaches, being too tired for sex. I told myself it was a strategy, a way to keep her off balance, make her want me more. Standard manipulation. But deep down, it was fear. Because if I didn't create space, I'd lose myself in her. And I couldn't afford that. Not now. Not when I was so fucking close. Then came the night of her birthday party. A big, lavish event she'd been planning for weeks. Invite only. Cocktail attire. A rooftop venue dripping with champagne and crystal chandeliers. She looked like a goddamn goddess. Slick black dress. Diamonds that probably cost more than my entire fake life. She clung to my side all night. Introduced me as her partner, her heart, her everything. And I smiled through it. Played the perfect girlfriend. Kissed her hand. Laughed at her friend's boring stories. Took photos with her under golden light, like we were some influencer couple on the rise. But inside, I was drowning. Not because of her. Because of me. Because every second I stood there wrapped in her love, her trust, her fucking sincerity, I felt like a fraud in my own skin. I slipped away mid-party. Went to the balcony. Lit a cigarette, even though I don't smoke. Just needed something to hold. That's when I saw Chase. Yeah, fucking Chase. Slick back hair. That arrogant smirk. Holding a drink like he owned the world. He spotted me. Walked over, smug as ever. Didn't expect to see you here, he said. I didn't answer. Guess you upgraded, huh? From me to her. Gotta say, you've got a type, rich and dumb. Go fuck yourself, I snapped. He chuckled. Touchy. Then he leaned in close. But you know she's gonna find out, right? I clenched my jaw. She's not stupid. Eventually, she'll start asking questions. And when she does, what's your move, sweetheart? I stared at him. Hard. Cold. You think I don't have a plan? He laughed. Oh, I know you do. But I also know you. You're slipping. Getting soft. He tapped his glass against mine. Watch your heart. It's showing. And with that, he walked away. Smug bastard. But his words? They stuck. Because he wasn't wrong. I was slipping. And I had to do something about it. Fast. The next day, I woke up early. Watched Tasha sleep. She looked peaceful. Beautiful. Mine. But also, dangerous. Because the deeper she fell for me, the more I started to fall into her too. And that couldn't happen. Not now. Not ever. So I made a decision. One final act. One clean break. One perfect betrayal. She handed me her world with open arms. And now, I was going to shatter it. Not because I hated her. Not because I wanted her to suffer. But because I couldn't afford to love her. And trust me, that's exactly what was starting to happen. So before it swallowed me whole, I had to disappear. But not without taking everything. Chapter 5, Cracks in the Fantasy. You don't just walk away from a con like this. You peel yourself out of it. Layer by layer. Lie by lie. It's not like slipping off a dress after a long night. It's more like ripping skin from bone. Every shred of the fantasy is laced with fingerprints and blood. Because when you've made someone fall in love with you, when you've moved into their life like a beautiful parasite, detaching means bleeding. And you can't bleed without leaving a trail. That's what I was trying to figure out. How to vanish without leaving a body. And how to do it without looking back. Because let me be honest with you. I wasn't just in too deep. I was starting to sink. Tasha made it so damn easy to love her. That was the problem. She wasn't stupid. That was never it. She was starved. starved for intimacy, for connection, for someone who looked at her like she wasn't disposable. And that's how I got in. Not through her wallet, through her wounds. She let me into places she didn't even know were locked, showed me the rawest, ugliest parts of her, and called it beautiful when I didn't flinch. She made me breakfast while humming 90s R&B. She left love notes in my coat pockets. She asked me questions no one else ever cared enough to ask, about my past, my pain, my real name. I never gave it to her, not because I didn't trust her, but because if I told her, I'd never be able to lie again, and I needed the lie more than I needed her love. Or at least, that's what I kept telling myself. The week after her birthday party, everything changed. I started stealing. Not money. Not yet. Information. I went through her drawers while she showered. I checked her browser history. Photographed every document in her filing cabinet, bank statements, tax forms, property deeds. I memorized alarm codes, learned which friends were trustworthy, which ones would turn on her with a whisper. And she never suspected a thing. Because love makes you blind. And trust. It makes you fucking stupid. Still, every night I laid beside her, staring at the ceiling, I started to wonder. Was this what normal felt like? Was this what people meant when they talked about being seen? Because she saw me. Not the version I sold to rich men and lonely women. Not the curated mask of sexual control and dangerous charm. She saw the shadows behind my eyes. The fear I wore like perfume. And she didn't run. That made her dangerous. So I started pushing her away. Subtly. Emotionally. Like removing bricks from a dam, one at a time. I picked fights over nothing. Got cold during sex. Claimed I was tired. Stressed. Needing space. I canceled dates last minute. I left her unread messages hanging for hours, sometimes a full day. And it worked. She got confused. Insecure. Which is exactly what I needed. The more she questioned herself, the less she'd question me. That's the trick, really. Make them blame themselves for the collapse you're orchestrating. But the problem with softening someone? Sometimes they soften you right back. There were moments I forgot what I was doing. When I'd see her curled up on the couch, barefoot in one of my hoodies, hair tied in a lazy bun, face glowing from nothing but laughter. And I'd feel it. That ache. That yearning for something real. I'd imagine a world where I stayed. Where we built something. Where I wasn't a liar, a thief, a manipulator. But then I'd remember who I was. Who I've always been. And I'd shut it down. Hard. Because emotions like that, they're poison in my line of work. Then came the night, everything started to unravel. It was late. I was alone in her condo. Tasha had flown out to Miami for a charity gala. The kind of event that reeked of generational guilt and overpriced champagne. I had the place to myself. A full 3 days. I told her I needed to clear my head. She thought I meant emotionally. But I meant literally. I tore through her office. Cracked open the lockbox she thought was hidden beneath her old yearbooks. Inside were all the keys, USB drives, signed contracts, private folders labeled with names I didn't recognize. Offshore accounts, corporate holdings, insurance policies with her name on them, and chases. That's when I realized, this wasn't just a breakup, this was warfare. She hadn't just wanted me to help her catch Chase cheating. She wanted me to help her destroy him. Legally, financially, personally. The problem? I was already halfway to destroying her too. But now, I wanted it all. I wanted Chase's blood money. I wanted Tasha's clean wealth. I wanted to wipe both of them out and walk away untouched. And for the first time in a long time, I had the tools to do it. That night, I made a copy of everything. Encrypted files. Passwords. Signed power of attorney documents. Video footage of Tasha talking shit about her family, about Chase, about her lawyers. I stored it on a remote drive. Hidden in plain sight. A safety net. Just in case things went sideways. Because that's the thing with cons. They always do. Eventually. And I could feel it. The walls were closing in. I started noticing strange behavior. People watching me too long in coffee shops. A black SUV parked near the condo for hours without moving. Tasha's friends getting distant. Cold. Whispers in corners when I walked into rooms. It wasn't paranoia. It was a signal. Something had shifted. Someone was watching. And not just me. Tasha too. Which meant it was time. Time to cash in. Time to disappear. Time to burn this entire beautiful lie to the ground. But then, she came home early. I was in her office, files spread across the desk, USB drive in hand, when the front door clicked open. Babe! Panic hit me like a car crash. I scrambled to shove everything back in place. Closed drawers. hid the drive under a stack of mail, smoothed my hair in the mirror, and adjusted my face like a mask slipping into position. She walked in, suitcase rolling behind her, cheeks flushed from travel, eyes sleepy but glowing. "I missed you," she said, dropping her bag. I kissed her, hard, to cover my shaking hands, to distract her, to silence the screaming alarm going off in my head. We made love on the living room floor. Fast, desperate, sweaty. Afterwards, she fell asleep on my chest. I stared at the ceiling, counting seconds, waiting for the crash, because I knew without a doubt, she saw something. She knew something. She wasn't stupid. She'd never been. And if I was going to pull this off, I had to move now. Not tomorrow. Not next week. Now. Because love? Love was never the plan. But betrayal? That was always the end game. And I was about to play my final hand. The only question left was who would fall first? Me or her? Chapter 6, The Breaking Point. I've always said the best lies are the ones wrapped in just enough truth to taste familiar. They slide down smooth, stick in the throat, make you wonder if maybe you were just wrong, if maybe you imagined everything. That's how you keep people in love. That's how you keep people loyal. But when a lie gets too big, too thick, too heavy, it doesn't slide anymore. It chokes. And I was choking, not because I was caught, not yet, but because I had lost track of which version of myself was real. The manipulator, the lover, the thief, the woman who kissed Tasha's lips at night and told herself it was all part of the con. Except it didn't feel like a con anymore. It felt like gravity, and gravity doesn't negotiate. After that night, her surprise return, my near slip, the way her body trembled against mine like she knew something was off, I couldn't sleep. I kept running through the plan in my head, rewinding and replaying every move like a heist film on loop. But something had shifted. She started watching me differently. Subtle, but it was there. Little things. The pause before she answered my questions. The way her smile sometimes missed her eyes. She began locking drawers she never used to lock. Password protecting files she once let me browse freely. And then there were her questions, gently placed, seemingly innocent, but sharp as razors beneath the surface. What would you do if we just ran away? Left everything behind? Do you ever think about starting over? Like, truly clean? What's your real name? Each one was a test. A carefully laid tripwire. And I passed them. Barely. But I could feel the trap tightening. And the worst part, I wasn't sure if she was trying to catch me, or protect me. 3 days later, she invited me to dinner. Not just any dinner. A private, catered meal on her rooftop. White linens. Champagne. Jazz playing softly from hidden speakers. The skyline glowing like a city in love with itself. She wore white. That should have been my first clue. White was never her color. It was too honest. Too fragile. She looked like a bride walking into a funeral. I wore black. Poetic, right? She smiled when she saw me. But it was tight. Contained. Like a scream held behind teeth. We sat across from each other, champagne flutes between us, candles flickering like nervous hearts. "I have something to tell you," she said, eyes fixed on mine. I leaned in, careful. Calculated. So fucking calm on the outside. "What is it?" She took a long sip before she answered. "I know what you've been doing. Just like that. No wind-up. No build. Just the blade, straight to the gut." My fingers curled around the stem of my glass, so tightly I thought it would shatter. I tilted my head. Played dumb. Innocent. Doing. Her smile widened, and it scared the shit out of me. She reached into a small clutch on the table and slid out a sleek black folder. Pushed it toward me. Inside. Photos. Documents. Screenshots. All of it. All. Of. It. A fucking portfolio of betrayal. Proof of the accounts I accessed. The files I copied. She even had timestamps, matched against video from her security cams. And the final nail? The burner phone I thought I'd hidden, photographed. Its screen displaying messages I'd sent to myself as part of the con's setup. "Jesus," I muttered, staring down at my own reflection in the glossy plastic. I looked up slowly. Her expression was unreadable. But her eyes were on fire. "How long?" she asked softly. "How long were you planning to bleed me dry?" I couldn't lie. Not here. Not now. Not when she already knew. So I gave her what I could. From the beginning, it was like saying it out loud flipped some switch. Her hand twitched slightly. But no tears. No shouting. Just silence. Cold. Wide. Endless. "Why?" she whispered. "Because it's what I do." She stared at me. Then she laughed. It was short. bitter, a sound that echoed off the skyline like something had cracked inside her. "You were going to ruin me," she said. "Just vanish one day and leave me gutted." "That was the plan," I admitted, voice steady. She poured more champagne, hand shaking just a little now. "And the sex, the I love yous, the way you held me at night like I was all you had." She was trembling now, but still no tears, still composed. "I meant some of it," I whispered, "and that was the worst fucking truth of all. Because I had. I did. And that's what made this unbearable." She stood up, walked over to the edge of the rooftop, looked down at the city. "You know what's funny?" she said, voice distant. "I knew. Deep down. I knew. You were too perfect. Too smooth. Everything felt so fucking scripted." I joined her at the ledge, stood beside her. Neither of us said anything for a moment. Then she turned to me. "I still love you." That hit harder than any slap. And I couldn't answer, because suddenly, words felt useless. "Empty." She pulled something from her coat pocket. A thumb drive. She held it between her fingers, dangling it like bait. "This is everything. Every account. Every file. Every secret. Yours too." My heart stopped. "You recorded me?" She nodded. "Of course. I'm not stupid." Then she stepped closer. Real close. So close her breath touched my lips. And whispered, "You can still leave. Take the money. Run. But if you do, I'll destroy you." I blinked. Felt the heat of her pulse against mine. "You'd turn me in?" "No," she said. "I'd bury you. I'd make it look like you never existed. I'd make every dollar you ever touched disappear." Then she pressed the drive into my palm and walked away. Just like that. No screaming. No begging. No violence. Just cold, quiet power. I stood there for a long time. Alone. Drive in hand. Heart fucking bleeding. Mind spinning. Because I realized something I never expected. She had outplayed me. She had played the player. And that was the sexiest, scariest thing anyone had ever done to me. I didn't sleep that night. I just sat in the dark with her files open on my laptop, staring at the ruin I had almost caused. And I thought about everything. The lies. The lust. The goddamn love. It wasn't supposed to end like this. I wasn't supposed to feel. But I did. And now I had a choice. Take the drive. Take the money. Disappear. Or stay. Own it. Face her. Beg. Maybe bleed. Either way, this was no longer just a con. This was a reckoning. And no matter what I chose, somebody was going to get hurt. Chapter 7. Love in the Ruins. There's a moment in every con where the mask becomes a mirror. You stop performing. You stop pretending. And what you see staring back at you isn't the version you crafted. It's something far more dangerous. It's who you really are. No edits. No filters. Just blood, bone, heartbreak, and consequence. That's where I was. Standing in the middle of the penthouse, my reflection fractured in every window, holding a thumb drive in one hand and a broken heart in the other. I had a decision to make. Burn her, or let myself burn. And both options felt like death. I didn't run. I packed a bag. Not with cash or files or backup identities, but with truth. A single hoodie that still smelled like her skin. A notebook filled with thoughts I never shared. A photo of us laughing in the rain. And the drive. I brought it too, but I didn't plan to use it. I planned to return it, like a thief returning the one thing she hadn't meant to steal, someone's trust. I wasn't sure if I was going there to confess or beg or bleed. Maybe all of it. Maybe none of it. All I knew was I couldn't end it like this. Cold. Silent. Unfinished. She wasn't home. The condo was dark. Empty. Too quiet. And yet, somehow it still felt like her. I walked through the room slowly, each one heavy with memories. The living room where she'd danced barefoot to sod. The kitchen where she'd burned pancakes and laughed like it was a secret only I could understand. Her scent lingered in the hallway, a mix of jasmine and irony. I left the bag on her bed, placed the thumb drive on the nightstand with a note underneath. "No more lies. If you want me, I'm not hiding. But I'll never take anything from you again. Not even the blame." Then I walked away. Every step felt like tearing skin from soul. I didn't look back. Couldn't. Because if I did, I'd break. And I needed to stay whole. At least until she decided whether I was worth shattering for. A week passed. No call. No text. Nothing. It was hell. I moved into a cheap motel off the freeway. Just me, a bed that creaked like guilt, and a minibar full of regret. I stared at the ceiling most nights, replaying every moment with her, every laugh, every moan, every breath that felt too real to be fake. I cried, for the first time in years, not because I lost the con, but because I lost her. And that was the real con, thinking I could ever walk away clean, thinking I could touch something real and not leave fingerprints. Day 9, she showed up. I heard the knock before I saw her. My whole body went still. The air thickened. My lungs forgot how to work. When I opened the door, there she was, standing in the motel hallway in a black coat, hair pulled back, eyes swollen but blazing. She didn't say anything, just looked at me like I was a puzzle she couldn't quite finish. Then she stepped inside, closed the door behind her, stood there in silence. I watched her carefully, afraid to speak, afraid that if I did, the moment would shatter. Finally, she broke it. You left everything. My throat burned. I had to. You could have run. I wanted to. So why didn't you? I took a step closer. Because I wasn't running from you. I was running from who I became with you. Her jaw clenched. You mean the liar? The manipulator? The thief? No, I whispered. The woman who let herself love you. She flinched like I'd slapped her. Then she laughed. But it was hollow. You don't get to say that word. Not after what you did. I know. You don't fucking know, she snapped, voice breaking. You infiltrated me. You slid into my soul like a poison I didn't see coming. And the worst part, I let you. I invited you in. I know. You watched me fall for you. You encouraged it. You kissed me like it meant something. You held me like I mattered. And the whole time, you were planning to rip me apart. I wasn't supposed to love you. She laughed again, colder this time. Then why do I still love you? I didn't answer. Because I didn't deserve to. Her eyes filled with tears, but she didn't let them fall. Not yet. I wanted to ruin you, she said. When I found the files, when I saw what you were doing, I wanted revenge. I wanted you gone. I was going to freeze the accounts, call the cops, leak your name to every contact I had. I nodded. I expected you to. But then I read your journal. My stomach dropped. You weren't supposed to. I did. Every page. Every fucked up, beautiful, contradictory word. And you know what I saw? She stepped closer, chest rising. I saw someone just as lost as me. Someone who's been surviving so long she forgot how to live. Someone who wanted love, but didn't think she deserved it. Her voice cracked. But you do. I broke. Tears spilled down my cheeks like sins I couldn't confess fast enough. I'm sorry. It was all I could manage. I know, she whispered. And then she kissed me. Not softly. Not gently. It was a collision. A crash. The kind of kiss that bruises. The kind that says, I hate you and I love you and I don't know which one is louder. We collapsed onto the bed. Clothes torn. Nails scratching. Tongues desperate. It wasn't sex. It was war. It was forgiveness. It was everything. Afterward, we lay tangled in silence. The kind that doesn't need to be filled. The kind that says we're still here. And maybe that's enough. In the morning, I woke up alone. But on the table? A folder. Inside was a plane ticket. A passport with a new name. A key to a safe deposit box in another city. And a note. You can stay. Or you can disappear for good. But either way, you leave with nothing you didn't earn. Choose wisely. Tasha, I held that note for hours. Read it 1,000 times. Cried again. And then I did the hardest thing I've ever done. I walked away. Not with money. Not with secrets. Just with memories. And guilt. And something else I didn't have before. A fucking soul. It's been 6 months. I live in a new city now. Small apartment. Clean job. No lies. Sometimes I see someone on the street who reminds me of her. Same hair, same eyes, same impossible grace. And for a second, I believe in ghosts. I still dream of her. Not in the way that haunts, but in the way that heals. Because for a little while, in the middle of all the chaos, I touched something real. And it changed me. She changed me. I used to be a thief who stole identities. Now, I'm just a woman who lost hers in love. And maybe, just maybe, found something better in the ruin.